This is Ayana Arrington here with Barb Getty. We're at the University City Library. So Barb, if you want to, can you spell your first and last name and also say that you agreed to do this interview?
My name is Barbara Getty, B-A-R-B-A-R-A-G-O-E-D-D-E, and I agree.
Okay. So do you want to start off giving like a brief overview of your experience or relation with the LGBTQ community?
I was active in the community after I came out in 1974. I had been at Washington U's art school prior to that, and wanted to go to graduate school but was not able to. And I started working at the bookstore at Washington University, and that's when I came out. I met some lesbians there. Kind of started on my journey as a lesbian and also as a lesbian feminist socialist, so to speak. At first, I just came out through the Washington University community. There was a group of students that I met with regularly, and some friends there, and some professors there, and we would set up events for gay people. And eventually, through working at the bookstore, I met some of the women that were organizing in St. Louis, and mostly they were living in South St. Louis. And so I got involved with them. They were putting out publications, and they had a women's car repair collective, and they put out a publication called Moonstorm, and they also, there were three big houses that housed lesbians on the south side of St. Louis, and I lived in one of those houses, and I would say my connections with them lasted about 5 years. And that's when I first got active in the lesbian feminist community.
So you say your connections with them lasted about 5 years. What happened after that?
Well, they were... after that, I kind of... moved away from them. I think I found the living situations to be very hard after a while. There was a lot of non-monogamy, and for me there was just a lot of heartbreak. So I moved on with a partner to a apartment in Lafayette Square, and I became involved in the Women's Sports Connection. And I played soccer with them, and I played softball with them, and I also eventually coached teams, both softball and soccer, for them. And I still remained involved with the Women's Eye bookstore, and also worked on a calendar called Iris, which was another lesbian feminist calendar that we tried to put out around 1982. And after that, I went into therapy for a while with a lesbian feminist therapist, and I did that for a long time in gay groups. And then I became involved with the women organizing to go to the gay games. And that was like 1984, 1985. I met Toddie Dunham, who was a well-known softball player and coach in St. Louis, and she was putting together teams to go to the gay games. So with those teams, I also played and coached. And over an eight-year period, we did go to two gay games. We went to Vancouver and New York City and won a gold medal in New York City. After that, we started women's hockey teams, and I did that for a while. And since about 2000, 2001, I didn't do too much in a way politically, but I did work. I've always worked at daycare centers, sort of as a extension of my feminist philosophy, and put a lot of work into relating to parents and children, and was out at both daycare centers that I worked at. And that was an up and down experience to be out at work among, especially taking care of small children. In 2010, I was asked to coach women's over 50 softball. And I did that for about 4 years, but then unfortunately I got sick. And since that time, 2014, I've been kind of struggling with my health, but that's kind of my overview of things I've done in the lesbian community.
You mentioned your feminist philosophy. How would you describe that?
I think early on, especially from my family history, I grew up in a family, a very German, you know, like second or third generation German family. And there was one boy in my family and five girls. And my father was the person who had the German ancestry and ran the house. And he kind of ran it like a ship captain. He was very strict. And I would say abusive. And when we got older, he basically refused to let his daughters do anything but go to secretarial school. And my sister, that was a year older than me, went against his will and got a loan to go to DePaul School of Nursing. And I got a scholarship to Washington University. But he still argued with us about women and their place in the world and still tried to restrict our movements. So I came out of that not very happy. And later in my life, after my father passed unexpectedly, my brother, inherited most of the Getty money and did not see fit to share it with his sisters. So I think that I've always had this philosophy that women, and with my father too, I always argued that I was equal to my brother and should have been. And I think that's the basis of where I became a feminist. My mother was badly treated by my father. Wasn't allowed to drive, wasn't allowed to have a job, didn't leave the home, had shock treatments when I was in college against her will. So I really think that that's where my interests came from. My philosophy, once I joined this group of women, was one of that group I was with, the Moonstorm group, were more interested in using socialism as a way to make the world at least monetarily more equal for men and women, so that only men's jobs didn't pay well, that there was an overall equal distribution of wealth, so that how wealthy you were didn't make a difference in whether you were heard or not in this country. And I think that that was really a big push in this group to make all minority groups heard and understood and responded to. So I think that that was the overriding thought there. Initially, when I first came out, a lot of women's groups were separatist. And by that I mean there were no men in the meetings. There were straight women in the meetings. But we didn't usually allow men in our women's spaces. There was a term of women's only spaces. And some of the bars and most of the bars and most of the meetings that I went to were women only. So that was also a philosophy that women needed to regroup and kind of feel their own power with each other before they could make any inroads into a real patriarchal system. So that was pretty much what it was. The Moonstorm Collective talked about a lot of issues, and I think as we went through and we kind of grew as a collective, our focus became less on women-only spaces and more on inequality in general in society. And we saw the problems of African Americans and immigrants and Native Americans and people of Jewish faith and all kinds of people that were kind of even, you know, we even aligned ourselves with gay men. So, and with men's groups that were willing to understand and accept our philosophies. So we became much less separatist and much more into organizing in the general population. Although I think most of us preferred the company of women once we understood how comforting that was. And as far as I know, in the three houses we had, there were never any men living in them. They were always women-only spaces. Some men did visit, but that was kind of the overriding philosophy, was to get your own shit together and then try to approach the world. We were also really concerned with getting people to come out, because at that time, the lesbians ahead of us, who are older than us, really were closeted and preferred to stay that way because they had built their lives around their lovers or their jobs and were not interested in coming out. So we really were trying to reach a large group of women, find lesbians wherever they were, and try to get the message that coming out was the only thing that was going to save you. Staying in the closet was not a life that was going to be very fulfilling for any of us. And the only power we had as lesbians was to unite in the national movements and give our resources and our time to making sure that people were coming out. Because no one could know to accept you if all they were doing was basing their assumptions on stereotypes. And I think until people began to come out in their families didn't even know that when they complained about gay people to your face, they were complaining about you. So it was really a striking time to be a gay person who was out in the community. And I really saw it as the only solution. I didn't see staying hidden and secluded as any place I wanted to be in my life. It was just not acceptable to me. And then, of course, if you had that point of view and then you met older women, and you met women that were resistant to this, you got a lot of backlash. And that happened a lot in my life. I got a lot of backlash about being out when I met a more diversified community of lesbians. And especially on sports teams, I think. There was the mix was sometimes straight and gay women. And I think there was a lot of backlash, not by the straight women, but by the gay women, that they did not want to be outed. And they did not want these straight women on the team to know who they were. And I think there was a lot of that, just in jobs and in places you would go and parties you were at, where people didn't really want to be out. They didn't feel it was safe. So I think that was a big part of our agenda also.
With the groups that you talked about, when you saw that coming out was an important thing for the older women to do, how did you approach that?
You know, I didn't know many older women, and the women I did were mostly fine with it. But there were women I did not know. You know, we had a number of bars, and one was called the Kit Kat Club. And it was a lot of older lesbians, and they were, you know, very doubtful that our way of living was going to be successful for them. And I think all you could do was talk to them. And I wasn't a frequent visitor to the Kit Kat Club because it was a butch femme club. And almost the minute you walked in, if you talked to somebody, you were categorized. And I think that system has come back around, but at the time, it's not what we wanted as lesbian feminists. We wanted a more androgynous culture where you could be either or, you know, your relationship wasn't defined by whether someone was the boy partner or the girl partner. We really didn't care. And at least in the circle I was in, there were some women that were really holding on to that and have always held on to that. But I didn't see it as very useful for the philosophies that we had. I didn't find it very useful. So the women we did approach, all we did was talk with them. And nobody was saying that they had to come out. They were just threatened that we were. You know, they didn't. No one said to them, well, now it's time for you to be in our pride parades, or, you know, but they questioned whether this was a wise move for them or for anyone at that time. So that's kind of how it went.
Can you describe more of the butch femme bars, or maybe other bars that were around?
We had, when I first came out, there was a, where Pie in the Central West End, that's at the corner of McPherson and Euclid. That area has always been a hub for gay, lesbian people as long as I've been out. And there was a bar there called Potpourri, and that was the men's bar. And down in the basement of that building, down a spiral staircase, which I hated, there was a bar down there called the Bottom of the Pot. And that bar was more the new feminists. It was more the lesbian feminists from Washington U and St. Louis U, and from colleges. I would say people that were under the age of 35 frequented that bar. That bar was, I don't know how long it was around, but eventually the West End, that whole area became very gentrified, and places where people were living over there, and houses that lesbians lived in, the owners could get a lot of money for them. And so I think lesbians, feminists in general, move south or farther down into the city to have places to live. But the bar itself You know, I was down there some. I didn't make a habit of going to bars. I was not a big drinker. And so the bar scene to me was someplace I went if a whole group of people was going, but I really didn't go there on my own to have a drink or to hang out. The other bar that came after the Bottom of the Pot was called, it was over on, maybe Newstead and Tower Grove, somewhere around there. And it was a woman named Mac McCann ran that bar. And I remember that bar being there for about 8 years. After a while, I didn't go to bars at all, especially when I got involved in sports. And the only bars I went to were places that the teams were going, and it was usually to restaurant-type places. And I don't know, I heard that eventually the middle of the road was firebombed, but I was not present at the bar. I only knew that it was. After that, a bar opened off Kings Highway called Genesis, and it was run by a gay man, but he welcomed women and men there. And that bar, I remember, is a Jiffy Lube now, but that bar I also remember going to. And the other one I went to a few times was up on Grand and Merrimack, much farther south. And it was called More or Less, and that was another Mac McCann bar. And that bar was also firebombed eventually. So bars and coffee houses have had a hard time surviving. We also had a coffee house early when I came out around 1975. And it was behind the Sears on Grand, and it was called A Women's Place. And a woman named Laura Ann Moore got together with the Moonstorm people and they rented the space. And I only remember being there a couple of times before it was firebombed. So we had a lot of opposition to being out. It wasn't this, I mean, for us it was liberating, but in terms of the general culture and the people around us, especially in South St. Louis, it was a difficult sell, to say the least. You know, the general public was not ready. I mean, I think they put up with gay men, but I don't even think they knew lesbians existed, honestly. I think that the general population had no idea that women were lesbians. So it was a very interesting time. In terms of where we lived, when I first moved to the South Side, I was living with my sister over in Des Moines. At that time, that part of Clayton wasn't built up yet. And now you couldn't afford to live in Des Moines, but at the time, you know, we had a 5-bedroom place with, it was only $175 a month. And I moved from there, and I moved to a house on the South Side, one of the houses, and we called it the Cat House, and it was 3863 Botanical. And I lived there with two other lesbians and some cats. And there was another house down the street. It was called Thornapple House, and that was 3910 Botanical. And then up the street across Grand was another house, and it was 3540 Botanical. And it had also groups of lesbians living in them. So that was kind of the setup of our houses. And while it was really fun and, you know, we really enjoyed being together, again, the neighborhood was hostile. It was not. I think July House did the best, being on the other side of Grand, around more educated people. I think on the south side of Grand, where we were, it was the people were just not accepting of having lesbian women in their neighborhood. They just did not like it. And we heard about it. Some of the things that happened were on one Halloween, they had stuffed a image of a woman, made a dummy, and put a knife in the belly and threw it on our porch. And other things that happened were there was a poor family flat across the street, and the young people in that flat used to call out to me as I was coming home from work, "Barb is a fag, Barb is a fag." And then they wrote it on my garage, on our garage. Another thing that happened was we had a women's car repair collective up the street on Botanical. And one morning my girlfriend and I woke up and the parts car, which was a little all broken down Volkswagen Beetle, was turned upside down. People had shot through our windows, knocked on our doors late at night, did their best to let us know we weren't welcome there. And I was not unhappy to leave because of that. You know, I felt a lot safer once I left that neighborhood in that kind of living situation. So it was difficult, but fun. You know, there were many sides to this, and many challenges, for sure. This group of women also ran a abused women's support project, and so they had a house up off of Grand, and it was an old house, and they were fixing it up, and they got people to help. There were a lot of carpenters and painters in our group of women. And they fixed the house up enough to invite women who came to get counseling to live in that house with their children. And there were many people in our collective who spent time up at that house volunteering and moving women in and out, staffing it because the location was a secret, but if partners of the women found out, they would come storming the doors and being threatening. So there were always people who needed to be there around the clock. And so there were some people in our group that did a lot of staffing. And in fact, one of them was my roommate.